The NHL trade deadline has come and gone for the NHL. This is Chad Benton, your host, with Rich Howe and Colin Blumen, and this is the Catfish and Ice Podcast, episode 35. How are you doing today, guys, on this Monday as we've moved past the NHL trade deadline?
It's Catfish on Ice daytime edition.
That's right.
Daytime edition. Normally we're coming to you like 9 or 10 o'clock at night. As you can see, the sun's pouring through the windows, at least in my house anyway, where I'm recording anyway.
I got those blackout curtains.
It's giving me some different vibes for sure, because we definitely usually record this late in the evening, usually after a Preds game. But we definitely wanted to go on live. We definitely wanted to go on live for this segment because the NHL trade deadline just happened. Wasn't a ton of fireworks for this deadline, but there were some big moves. There were a lot of moves that happened within the Central Division, mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the Preds and how they did make one move very late after the deadline had actually passed. It trickled out, came out. They made a move. We're going to talk about who they just made, and we're going to talk about how we feel about their strategy, which is basically they didn't do much of anything. So we're going to talk about our feelings about that when it comes to the long-term future, the playoff push, all that stuff. And then we're going to definitely get into the game against the Dallas Stars, which was, I'm going to go ahead and say, was one of the most exciting games of the season, in my opinion. That game had me on the edge of my seat. Couldn't get enough of it. I've brought up in the past that my roommate is a diehard Dallas Stars fan. I was watching this game with him. And it's really fun to watch an opposing fan squirm and toss and turn as they're watching the game. I was doing the same thing watching the game with him because that was a back-and-forth game. So we're going to get mm-hmm. into that, talk about the implications of that win last night against the Dallas Stars. And then we've got an awesome interview that we had with Ray Perkin, who writes for the Hockey Writers, covers the Nashville Predators. He's also a big Ottawa Senators fan as well. We had an interview with him talking about all things Predators. He has a lot of really good opinions on the Preds, and we were very honored to have him join the podcast. So that's going to wrap up the episode for tomorrow. When you download the podcast, that you'll hear that interview. So let's go ahead and get right into it. Again, we are presented by DraftKings. This is the Catfish and Ice Podcast, episode 35. And let's talk about DraftKings real quick. DraftKings is our sponsor. It's the top-rated sportsbook app in America. It's safe, secure, and reliable. And you can use our promo code THPN right now for new users to have a lot of fun with this home stretch of the NBA season that's going on right now. The teams, we got a lot of NBA teams making a playoff push. And right now, what you can do is download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app and use promo code THPN when you sign up to turn $1 into $100 in free bets if the basketball team of your choosing hits a three-point shot. That's code THPN to turn $1 into $100 in free bets. For a limited time only at the DraftKings Sportsbook app, must be 21 years or older in New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania. New customers only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. And if you have a gambling problem, please call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT. So go have fun with the DraftKings Sportsbook app and bet on some NBA basketball. A lot of fun there. So let's talk about the trade deadline that just passed. You know, of course, things can trickle out after the deadline officially passes and the clock hits that official deadline. And let's talk about what the Preds did. They actually came out and traded a seventh-round pick for Eric. What's his last name again?
No, you tell us.
Gudbranson. Eric Gudbranson from the Ottawa Senators. He's been in the league for a while now. He's a pretty big guy, pretty big body, but it's got a lot of us scratching our heads right now because I've felt pretty good about what the youth has done this season, and this screams at me that the Preds aren't confident in what they have, and so they felt the need to go out and get a veteran defenseman to boost their depth, and so that's why this trade is a head scratcher for me. I'm not saying it's like some trade that's going to ruin everything. It's a very low end deal, seventh round pick, not a big deal, but it's still just a really puzzling trade. Colin, how do you feel about it, man?
It's unnecessary. Like, I mean, it was kind of like a trade just to be announced. Like, we were like, we were watching the deadline go by, and David Poyle is like, you know, he's like, I think we need to do something just so we can get the Preds name out there. And this was the move he came up with, because it just, it doesn't feel necessary. I mean, guys like Carrier Davies, you know, they've been playing very well. We've got Harper. I don't get the dislike for Harper. I think he's a very solid defenseman. Yes, he stays home. He's not necessarily the fastest skater, but he also is not a liability, and he's good at disrupting in the neutral zone and in the offensive zone. He's a big body. He can lay the hits when he needs to, but I think he's very serviceable for a third pairing, and less mistake-prone than like a Barwieski even. And so, you know, and we still don't have Burrow back. We have Benning that's been okay. Like, we have Frederick Allard. But we have so many guys that are out there that are kind of waiting for their chance that are probably more talented in terms of just where they are right now, even being rookies. Missy's a veteran, and that's all well and good, but like, veteran presence to me, it's hard for me to say like, okay, he's a veteran, so like, he deserves a chance, because he's not really done much with his career with his veteranship, I guess, for lack of a better term. Like, the guy isn't exactly, you know, he's not a game changer for me. So yes, it's a depth move, and obviously, like, we've been bitten by injuries, but we've also had a lot of guys step up, and I guess that, you know, when we do get healthy, he's going to be eating in some playing time, and I'm not sure who I would take out in favor of him. I mean, there's some guys that were starters at the beginning of the season, like Barwieski, who I think might be, you know, scratches from here on out, just because I think that there are some rookies that play better, not just only on the defensive side of things, but also in special teams play. So that's kind of where I'm at with it, is it's kind of a nothing move. I guess we just, you know, didn't think much of the seventh round pick or Brandon Fortunato, but, you know, and I feel kind of bad for him. Well, maybe it's a fresh start for him. He can be better in their system, but it just seems kind of unnecessary. Like, it was just a move to make a move more than anything, is what it feels like.
What are your thoughts on it, Rich? I kind of agree with Colin there. It just feels like a move that didn't seem like it really changes much. Like, it's just, it's like a move for the sake of making a move almost, like, you know?
Right. Yeah. First off, glad to see your boys, beards are coming back in
slowly but surely.
Mine's doing pretty well, but it now just feels, it's like in that annoying length where it's like, I want to shave phase. It. Like, it's not a full beard. Gotcha. Like, so I'm in that weird transition mode when it comes to the playoff beard, as I should say.
Right. Yeah. I agree with Colin as well. It kind of feels like when they picked up Corbini and Holzer last year, we were just talking about it before, and I think in our Predlines group, somebody, it might have been Colin, maybe somebody else, said maybe Fabro and Borowiecki are hurt more than they're letting on, or Carrier, and they're just trying to get some depth.
Yeah, that's a really good way to look at it, though. Actually,
yeah,
you do have some lingering injuries that we don't know the full extent of. Yeah. So that is a really good way to look at it there, Rich.
Yeah, that wasn't my idea, but that's a good point. It might be why. And like you said, he's a big body, 6'5", 222, I believe is what they said.
Plus, he's a veteran. He's a veteran leadership. Yeah. So, I mean, none of us are sitting here saying like, oh my God, this move is just horrible. What are you thinking? It's more or less just like a weird, like, you didn't see it coming. Like, I didn't expect them to address it in this way. If anything, I saw them selling current assets in terms of players. I definitely didn't see them trading a draft pick to add a player. I didn't see that coming. Yeah.
Plus, you kind of feel a little bad for the youth guys, you know, because that's going to take – he could take somebody's spot who we will – you know, we talk about the youth movement. And we want to see these guys get as much playing time as possible, and now, you know, that might not happen, but – they're making the push, I guess. So
So Gudbranson, they're adding a veteran for sure. He's got, let's see here, over 500 games of NHL experience.
Wow.
So, I mean, the guy's been around for a while. He puts up a lot of hits. This current season, he's got over 90 hits, 92 hits. He's a big body, 51 block shots on the season. He's coming over here from the Ottawa Senators. So, I mean, he's going to do some dirty work. He's definitely – and to look at it on the positive side, you are getting this player for a seventh-round pick. So it's not like you're taking this huge risk and you're making this bold move that can come back and really hurt you. The only thing that you have to look at is it does mean you're taking away a spot for a Ben Harper or, you know, a Carrier or
even David Ferentz. I forgot to mention Ferentz. I mean,
or David Ferentz, So that's kind of the trade-off you're making there, is you're probably moving out some youth to put you – you're basically saying you would rather have a veteran in that spot.
Yeah. Right.
is what you're getting out of that. But other than that, I mean, I guess stuff could still come out after the deadline, something major. But for, you know, we're recording live like 45 minutes past the deadline right now for all of our podcast listeners who go and download the podcast tomorrow. So, yes, a move could come out after we finish recording. But as of now, the Preds pretty much stayed inactive for the deadline. They didn't sell off. They didn't sell off Mikael Granlund. They didn't sell off Mattias Ekholm. They didn't make any big splashes when it came to selling, which we thought was for sure going to happen going back a month and a half ago or even 2 months ago. And so, but let's look at this. So the trade deadline came and went, and there has been some other moves that have occurred and within the Central Division. And so is there any moves that are sticking out to you guys as far as other Central Division teams, like the Chicago Blackhawks were pretty busy. They made some moves. The Columbus Blue Jackets fire sale is in full force.
That's a big one.
Yeah. Well, that kind of stings too, because I'm looking at the Columbus Blue Jackets, and we kind of need them to be the disruptors and the spoilers for us to help us beat back Chicago and Dallas. And so to see them selling kind of makes me a little anxious, because I'm like, man, I wanted you guys to at least steal one or two in your series against Chicago and Dallas. And
they kind of the Blue Jackets ended up taking the role that we thought we would be in.
Yeah,
that's kind of what ended up happening. So. But let's look at some other big moves. So the Panthers picked up Sam Bennett from the Calgary Flames. Let's see. Soderberg went to the Colorado Avalanche from the Chicago Blackhawks. I felt like that was a pretty big move for the Avalanche, for sure. I think that's a really good trade for them. And they really The Blackhawks also traded Mattias Janmark, good young player, a good young forward. They traded him. And they picked up a second-round pick in 2021, a third-round pick in 2022. So the Blackhawks have been very, very active. Probably like more so than any other team in the Central Division. And the Tampa Bay Lightning, everyone's like, gosh, like, can the Tampa Bay Lightning get any better? And I think they did. I think the Tampa Bay Lightning actually got better. They picked up Savard. David Savard from the Detroit Red Wings, or it was a three-team trade, but they ended up getting him from the Columbus Blue Jackets, actually. And it was a three-team trade with the Detroit Red Wings were involved in that. And so, so the Tampa Bay Lightning get themselves another very quality defenseman. So the rich get richer.
Yeah.
The big one that I had just heard while we were waiting to come on here was the Anthony Mantha. Detroit traded him to Washington for a first-round pick.
That's a big haul. The Red Wings are stocking up on some draft picks there. It should be no surprise that the Red Wings are sellers, obviously.
Yep.
And you look at the Washington Capitals, they definitely made a big move there. You got to like that move for the Capitals. They're definitely all in and they're buying. So that shouldn't be a big surprise. But I think that's a good move for the Capitals.
And one and for Mantha.
More power to David Poyle. Yeah. To Laviolette. I'm excited. Yep. I think they're trying to get a run because, I mean, they're in a good position to do so. So more power to him.
Yep. And then another big move within the Central Division that happened yesterday was the Blue Jackets sent Nick Foligno to the Toronto Maple Leafs, and the Blue Jackets got a fourth-round pick in 2022 and a first-round pick in 2021. And I'm pretty sure I saw somewhere that the Blue Jackets – are stockpiling some first-round picks.
They have like nine over the next 4 years or something. I know they have three in next year's draft. It's crazy. They're going to have
– The rebuild is on for the Columbus Blue Jackets is what we can really pull from the NHL trade deadline.
Yeah.
And so that covers a lot of the big ones. Like we said, a lot of action did happen in the Central Division.
So my question I got a question for you guys. How long do you think Tortorella sticks around? Since, I mean, all this stuff with Columbus is a rebuild. It's looking like Tortorella doesn't seem like a rebuild kind of guy. So I'm wondering.
I don't think a lot of people expected the Blue Jackets to be in this heavy of a sell-off mode.
I was going to say, I thought they might sell off Patrick Laine even after getting him early in the season.
Yeah.
He was definitely – the Blue Jackets were definitely one of those playoff bubble teams.
Yeah,
and a lot of people had him penciled in.
A lot of people were also wanting to get Tortorella out of here, so he might wind up leaving on his own.
Yeah. There you go. But the Blackhawks, I think, were definitely the most active team in the division for sure. And they're still hanging around in the playoff push. So we'll have to see how this changes their team. There's a lot to sort out when it comes to what the Blackhawks did. But, so now let's refocus on what the Preds did. So they didn't really do much other than adding the defenseman there for the seventh-round pick. And so they're basically making a statement that they feel very confident in moving forward with this playoff push with what they have. What you can't argue with that type of thinking, considering how great this last month and a half has been for the team. So, I mean, I was still on the side of selling – trading Mikael Granlund was the big one. I thought they should have done that. Maybe there wasn't a good enough deal out there on the table. That's possible.
I find it hard to believe, though. I mean, there's
Buffalo. I find it hard to believe, too.
Yeah.
Especially,
go ahead, Rich.
I was just going to say, especially the way, like, you watch him when they played Dallas last night, which we're going to talk about in a little bit, and he was playing really well, hitting people, like, I thought he was doing pretty good.
His stock has to be so high, and you look at the point where the Buffalo got for some of their guys, and it's like, man, if there was a time for the Preds to sell, it probably is right now because people are paying through the nose for some of these guys. You figure Granlund could get something similar to what Taylor Hall got because the production is pretty similar in terms of what they've been doing. So, it's weird.
It just tells me that the Preds are very confident in what they have, and they feel really good about – not only securing that fourth playoff spot eventually, but actually making some noise and being competitive. And I just feel like if the Preds somehow slip up and don't end up making the playoffs, they fall out of that fourth spot and either the Dallas Stars take it or the Chicago Blackhawks take it, we're really going to look back at this trade deadline and really feel like, what were we thinking? We could have gotten some good value in return. But instead, we went all in with what we had, and we didn't even make the playoffs anyway. I'm really hoping that doesn't happen, obviously, but that's kind of like, just thinking that way, it's like, man, they really do have to deliver now and get in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And then with what they decided to do.
And beyond that, like, what do you do with the expansion draft? What do you do with these restricted free agents?
There's so much to figure out going into next season when it comes to this current roster. So well, that's going to be – hey, it's going to make for a very entertaining offseason. I got to tell you that.
Oh, yeah.
If you're a Preds fan, it's not going to stop for you. Even when the season's over, this offseason is going to be a very interesting one to follow if you're a Nashville Predators fan. So stay tuned for that. We will be covering all that.
Our man, Lucas Pisa, made it through unscathed, so we'll have him still. Yeah. So I'm happy about that.
Some other pieces I thought the Preds were definitely – possibly trade. I really felt like Eric Holla was a high possibility of being traded. Didn't happen. Brad Richardson, who hasn't even played hardly this season, so it's kind of like you feel confident in trading him away because you haven't needed him anyway. So I'm just really surprised that more moves weren't made by the Preds. But again, a lot of people did see this coming. It was starting to feel that way that the Preds weren't going to do much, and that's what ended up happening. So now the Preds have to seal the deal, and they got to get in the playoffs. Like, the pressure's on.
Yeah.
Yep. The pressure is really on. Poyle's either going to be a genius or a pariah, one or the other.
And it's really easy to be an armchair GM and hindsight's 20/20, all that good stuff. Look back, Monday morning quarterback type of stuff. It's hard to be in his position. So we're not pretending like we'd be better than him at it. Definitely not. We're going to have to wait and see how this happens.
Did you say hindsight?
Hindsight, yeah. Sorry. That's what I was going for there. Glad you picked up on that, Colin. That's what I was going for.
Hindsight.
All right. Like, so now that the NHL trade deadline's over and the Preds are basically moving forward with what they have and what's gotten them here, let's talk about arguably one of the biggest wins of the season. And that's what they just did last night against the Dallas Stars. For the third time this season, they beat the Stars in the shootout. And all four of their wins have taken overtime or the shootout to beat the Dallas Stars. But they got the win. They got that extra point, which is critical. And like I just said earlier in the episode, it was probably one of the most exciting games I've seen this season, if not the most exciting game I've watched this season. Yeah. I couldn't get enough of it. So what stood out to you, Colin, about the game the most?
It was awesome. I'm glad that we got the win. I think that there's a lot. I'll get to the details here in a second, but I am a little nervous just because we did let them get another point. You know, it's one of those things where I would have loved to have beaten them in regulation because they're racking up those overtime points, and that I feel is going to be like it's going to bite us in the ass at some point.
I mean,
and I hope it doesn't.
15, 14, and 11. That's the record. That is just the weirdest record I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
15 wins, 14 losses, 11 overtime losses to give them a point percentage of 0.512, which is tied with Chicago, interestingly enough. They had the same point percentage. And then you got the Preds sitting up there at 0.547 point percentage. So the Preds got themselves a little bit of a cushion here, even with the Dallas Stars having those games in hand.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be a wild ride. That's all we can really say about it. But as far as the game goes, you know, we looked good. I think the intensity was there. I would say even with, you know, Olivier being out, which was kind of a concern, the herd line just they looked really, really good. Yakov Trenin was destroying some people.
Tanner Janot was wrecking people.
Tanner Janot looked like Derrick Henry in a Predators jersey with the way he was destroying some guys, which is good. I mean, that physicality, like that wears on a team. You could see Dallas over time. Like initially they were trying to test the waters a little bit, trying to be physical with us. And when we got physical back, you saw Dallas back off a little bit and kind of play a little more timid, a little more straightforward hockey, which I think is good because it let us set the tone a little bit more. I mean, they're a hard team in general to set the tone against, but we get more leeway to do so when we can play that physical game like that. The third period, I think both teams were gassed because it just seemed like it was trading punches, but nobody really getting sustained offense. There were some times where I got nervous, and you know, we always kind of see a little bit of that bad habit creeping back where it's like we don't clear the zone fast enough or we turn it over in our zone. That too. I mean, even the first goal they got where Ellis turned it over, it was just like, come on, guys. Like, we're better than that. We need to be better than that.
I'm glad you brought up that point, Colin, because what I saw, especially in that third period, was the Preds were very fortunate to not give up a goal and fall behind or even give up. Or, you know, like, basically, I felt like the Preds were about to really lose control of the game. They couldn't get it out of the zone to save their lives. The Stars were settling in, and you were just waiting. Like, they looked gassed, like you said. Like, the Preds looked really gassed. They were on fumes, and they just kept figuring out ways to – and I think the Stars also had some self-inflicted wounds, for sure. They iced the puck a couple times when the Preds didn't even force it. So the Stars didn't do themselves any favors. And I think if you're a Stars fan, you were leaving last night's game extremely frustrated that you didn't put the nail in the coffin and beat the Preds in regulation.
I will say the biggest thing that stood out to me, though, the penalty kill. I mean, for the penalty kill to work three times, the penalty kill has been so much better than what it was in the beginning of the year. I mean, we saw what it looked like when we allowed seven, you know, goals, and basically I think it was like five of them were off the penalties. For three penalty kills to all be converted, that's awesome. We can't beat that. I'd like to see a power play do it, but that's a good start.
What did you see from the game, Rich? What was kind of some of your takeaways from it?
So just how tough the Predators were playing. They were just taking the fight to Dallas, which, you know, we all know how tough Dallas is. So the Predators wound up with 33 hits to Dallas's 22, and usually that's
insane total.
Nowhere near that. So, and then, you know, the Predators had fewer shots on goal. There was a point where it was like
14 shots on goal. I think in the third period for a big time, they added to that total late in the game.
They did, yeah. They wound up with 20, but just that third period, like you said, was real. It was kind of weird because, like, it was just nonstop back and forth. There weren't any, you know, no whistles, and they just were. It was a really good hockey game. Just that back and forth was awesome. So,
yeah, looking at the shots on goal by period, the Preds only had 13 shots on goal coming into the third period, and then they only added four shots on goal in the third period, and then they added another three shots on goal in the overtime period. Which that overtime period was back and forth. Usually in overtime on 3-on-3 hockey, you see one team kind of take that opening faceoff and control the possession, and it's like, here we go. But not in this case. In this case, both teams had their chances in overtime before it went. And then how about Victor Arvidsson almost beat the clock right before overtime hit? It almost felt like you were watching the last possession of a basketball game almost. Like, the Preds took it down to like 6 seconds left, and then Arvidsson rushes up the ice, crashes the net. I mean, that was like –
yeah,
that was insane.
Grimaldi did that too. He took it to the net too. I think that's what I like to see is these guys are just putting it all out there. You know, we didn't see that at all last year. And they're definitely even the beginning of the season. And then they've really turned into like a totally different team.
Yeah. Shout out to Yakov Trenin for getting the third star of the game. Good for him.
I mean, he played awesome a great game, and that goal getting the puck towards the net plus the hits. Like, the dude was the Hertlund's been putting in the work. They're really, we say they're the fourth line, but they're the tone setters. In a lot of ways, I look at them more like a 2B or even a 3B kind of line because they just, they've got talent. They're just more of a physical presence than an offensive presence. But I mean, he showed that physicality can produce offense, which is what you want to see from a line like that. So good stuff.
Yeah. Got to show a lot of love. Got to show a lot of love to Tanner Janot. Tanner Janot, man, he came in and played a very, very solid game. I think he put up 4 hits in the game.
Did not look like a rookie against a team that's a pretty big team. I mean, he was jarring with everybody from Ben to all those guys. Like he was not going to be intimidated by any of them.
Yeah, Arvidsson got a fight. That was good.
That's such a weird thing to see. He was not happy at all about something.
No, and you know what? He shouldn't have been. I don't blame him one bit because when they were fighting over by the bench, who was it? Was it Como? Was that who it was? Or was it Cogliano?
I don't remember. Cogliano.
Yeah, I think it was
when they were all tied up in the bench, Cogliano punched him, Arvidsson, right in the face, right in front of the ref. And, you know, you can't blame Arvidsson at all.
Well, Arvy kind of punched back, but I don't think Arvy really intended for it to be a fight. And then he just kept going at it. And Arvy was like, "All right, I'm over this." And they let him go at it.
This is kind of the identity that the Preds are getting now, though. They're like, "Okay, you're not going to intimidate us. You're not going to push us around. You might have the more talented team on paper. Yada yada yada. We might have all these rookies and all this inexperience. We are not backing down." And as a fan, you can't get enough of that.
No, you love it. They said that was Arvidsson's only his second fighting major of his career, which that's
– Wow. That's that. Well, that doesn't surprise me.
The fact that he uprooted a guy and put him down on the ice and then got some hits on top of him, and he's the smaller guy in that fight, that was awesome to see. So.
Yeah, it was great.
So standings update. How about this? The Preds are tied with the Blue Jackets and the Red Wings for the most games played in the division now.
Oh, wow.
They played 43 games. So you got to kind of like pay attention to that because that's kind of like you got to pay attention to these games in hand. So the Preds got 47 points, 23 wins, 19 losses, 1 overtime loss. And at 47 points, they got a 4-point cushion on the Chicago Blackhawks. And, of course, they've dominated that season series, haven't lost to the Chicago Blackhawks all season. And we've got a 3-game stretch coming up against the Chicago Blackhawks, 3 games
that's
in a row.
Crazy.
That's your playoff right there. That's probably you sweep those 3 games, and then you're starting to feel pretty confident that the Preds are going to make this playoff spot. Yep.
It's going to depend on Dallas too, because they've still got some games in their pocket. But I mean, that's the thing is, we set the tone with that. If we win those 3 games, if we can steal 1 or 2 from this upcoming Tampa Bay and the Canes, that'd be really helpful for us, especially with keeping pace with the Stars.
Look at Dallas's remaining schedule. They've got a really tough remaining schedule. They still got to play Carolina twice. They've still got to play Tampa Bay twice. They've got a lot of games against Chicago coming up too. And so Dallas can still very well control their own destiny and make the playoffs. So we've been saying this for a couple weeks now. Keep an eye on the Dallas Stars, which makes that win last night all the more important. Even if it did once again take a shot, you still love to get that extra point, build yourself a little more cushion against the Dallas Stars, put that pressure on them. And so that's what we're taking away from the game. This is episode 35 of the Catfish on Ice podcast. Coming at you during the day, midday.
Midday. Version. Up next, Catfish Colin has the weather. We're like on the radio.
I was gonna say there's 3 different cities here.
I'll go ahead and do the traffic report and tell you that it's the same as it is every day. Interstate 24 is a log jam.
Yeah.
So the Preds are playing very well. I think we should be really excited, even if they didn't do much at the trade deadline. I think we should still have a lot of confidence that they're gonna get that fourth spot. What they do past that remains to be seen. But if they somehow miss the playoffs after not doing much at the trade deadline, it's going to look really bad. So let's hope that doesn't happen. Coming up next on episode 35 of the Catfish and Ice podcast, presented by DraftKings. Go use the promo code THPN if you're a new user with the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Coming up next on episode 35 is our interview with Ray Perkin of the Hockey Writers. He covers the Preds. He's a big friend of the show. He joined us earlier this week to talk all Preds, talk about the expansion draft, talk about their chances in the playoffs, talking about contract situations going into the offseason. We got into a lot of really good stuff with Ray Perkin of the Hockey Writers. So make sure you download the podcast tomorrow and check that out. If you're watching live on Periscope and Twitter right now, make sure you go download the Catfish and Ice podcast, episode 35 tomorrow, to check out that interview. And we will be right back for that. Until then, everyone take care. And we will see you later this week for episode 36.
Preds.
And we're back for episode 35 of the Captain Fish on Ice Talk, brought to you by the Network and presented by DraftKings. Go download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use our promo code THPN to get on the all the fun that's going on in the sports world right now. And so now we're really excited to have an awesome guest join our show, and that is Ray Perkin, who covers the Nashville Predators for the Hockey Writers, and also does his own movie blogging project on the side. So, Ray, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. The sun is shining. The weather's warm here up in Atlantic Canada, so things are looking up.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're from way on the east coast of Canada, right? Like way up there.
That's right.
Kind of,
yeah.
Kind of explain to our listeners, kind of where you're joining us from.
Yeah, so I'm in the province of New Brunswick, so in the east coast of Canada. So we don't really have a National Hockey League presence here on the east coast. There's a lot of teams that play in the Canadian Hockey League. Like the Moncton Wildcats and the Halifax Mooseheads and the Charlottetown Islanders are all teams based here, but we don't really have an NHL team in this region. So the fandoms are kind of scattered mostly between Boston, Montreal, and Toronto. So I'm a bit of an outlier because I don't cheer for any of those teams, but there's a lot of big passionate NHL fans here. Obviously, with guys like Sidney Crosby and Nathan MacKinnon are from Nova Scotia. Sean Couturier is from the northern part of New Brunswick. So there's, despite the fact that there's no teams out here, there's still a lot of really passionate fans for various teams and various players as well.
Yeah, so I guess part of it is there's not a big enough market to support an NHL team up there. I'm just kind of surprised because I know that hockey's got to be like such a big passion for that part of Canada, really in all of Canada. So I guess that would be part of it, right? Is this just not a big enough market to support an NHL team in that part of Canada?
Yeah, population-wise, we're a pretty small region, and most of the region is pretty rural as well. Like Halifax would probably be the biggest city in terms of an NHL style of market. Not to say, like, I think if, I mean, it would take a lot of legwork and kind of pre-research and everything, but I think if the NHL was to someday put a franchise in Halifax, I think it would be successful. It would be kind of one of those smaller market type teams, similar to like what Winnipeg is doing. Like Winnipeg's not a huge market as far as a city goes, but just the regional, the regional passion for the team is very strong. I think you could someday have something similar like that in Halifax. I don't, like, there's nothing in the works as far as I know to do with that, but
I think Canada deserves another team in the future, so we'll just have to see how that goes eventually. But all right, so, and you also do the movie blogging for Talking Films. I know there's tons of movie buffs out there. I know one of my co-hosts, Rich Howe, is a big movie guy, so I'm sure he would love to talk with you on the side about all the stuff you do with that. But let's go ahead and get into this Preds talk here. Of course, you cover the Preds for the Hockey Writers, which is a great publication. I invite everyone to go read the content on the Hockey Writers. I know I do myself. So let's go ahead and jump right into what's going on with the Preds. Of course, They are unexpectedly in this playoff hunt, and they were dead in the water not even a month and a half ago, and now all of a sudden they are on everyone's radar across the NHL landscape. They're in the fourth playoff spot currently and just playing some great hockey. And so let's go ahead and get into – and, of course, they're ravaged by injuries. The injuries just keep coming and coming. Every day there is a new player that's put on IR. It's just – and these injuries are coming out of nowhere. They're not like these crazy injuries that are happening during the game that you notice. It's like it's coming the next day. And so let's start off with this. I want to ask you this, Ray. What's been some of the biggest standouts from the Preds this season as far as – whether it's players or some type of statistic that sticks out to you or something like that. But, and I know there's a lot to choose from, but just kind of give me some of the biggest things that have stood out so far this season for you.
Yeah. Well, in terms of players, I mean, it's easy to go down the road of looking at Ili Tolvanen and how well he's played. It's easy to look at a guy like Kalle Järnkrok and how well he's played. But for me, for whatever reason, over the last month or so, I guess my kind of primary focus, like the group that I end up watching the most whenever I'm watching the Preds, is the blue line. And you know, like you referred to injuries, like about a month ago, the blue line was just decimated. Like Josi was out of the lineup. Ellis was out of the lineup. Borowiecki was out of the lineup. I think Ekholm was also out of the lineup for a game along with all that crew. But the blue line has really impressed me over the last month. And in particular, all these young guys who keep popping into the lineup, like Alex Carrier, his first few games, he looked right at home. Jeremy Davies, his first few games, he looked right at home. You know, David Ferentz the other night, even Tyler Lewington, like their confidence with the puck, all those young guys has been really, really impressive. Obviously, Josi, since he came back from his injury, he did not have a good start to the year. The blue line had a good start to the year. And I think that's, you know, if you were to point to a turnaround in the season, it's to me, it's the play of the blue line. Like the first 20 or so games, the like 1 through 6, the entire blue line was bad. They were not good. Josi was putting up points, but he looked lost in the defensive zone.
He didn't look like himself at all. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. He had a couple of flashes here and there. Like he had an overtime goal early in the season. That was a highlight. But other than that, like he was pretty quiet and didn't look like himself. Ekholm was okay, but not the Ekholm that he's been since he came back from injury. You know, Borowiecki and Benning as the third pair. Like I was excited about that third pair at the start of the year before the season started, but they looked lost in the defensive zone too. But it's funny because since all those big names on the blue line went out with injury, like that's been kind of the strength of the team. And part of it has been all these young guys coming in with all this confidence and moving the puck well and looking comfortable and confident and composed. And then you add Josi back in and he looks like a completely different player. Like he looks like the Norris Trophy winner from last year. You add Ekholm into the mix and he looks like a Norris Trophy candidate. You know, you bring Ben Harper into the lineup. To me, Ben Harper has been the most impressive player on the roster over the last 20 games. And it's surprising to me that I say that because being an Ottawa fan and growing up watching the Sens for a number of years, I remember Ben Harper when he was playing in Ottawa and I liked him. I understood why he didn't get the minutes that he did because at that time, Ottawa had guys like Erik Karlsson and Mark Mathot and Dion Phaneuf and Mark Borowiecki. He wasn't going to get the minutes that he maybe should have. But again, like he's not as good as those guys were. But since he's come into the lineup, he's really been a steadying presence. He's a big body. He's 6'6".
Yeah.
He moves the puck really well. He skates really well for someone of his size. And he's been really, really steady and consistent in the defensive zone. And I think that's something that they missed over the first 20 games. And especially now with all the young guys and Josi's come back, Ekholm's come back. Harper's been that one constant over the last 20-ish games that he's been in the lineup for, and he's looked really good. So to me, like if you were to ask me like which one player has stood out the most, to me it's Ben Harper. And I know that's not a popular pick.
No, that's
because he's not flashy. Like he's not Josi. He's not Ellis. He's not going to do something that makes you go, "Wow, that was really good."
He's doing a lot of the dirty work down there.
Yeah,
And it doesn't always stick out the highlights.
Yeah. And to me, like I kind of have this sinking feeling in my stomach that once the blue line gets healthy again, Harper's not going to be in the lineup anymore. And you know, that's a shame because I feel like he's earned his way into being a regular.
Yeah.
And especially now with, you know, with so many injuries on the blue line too, like Fabro's out, Carrier's out. There are more young guys in the lineup. I almost wonder, like, at what point does John Hines try a defense pairing with Roman Josi and Ben Harper?
Yeah.
Because we haven't seen that yet.
Well, I think the number I saw the other night was the Preds have now used 14 defensemen this season, which is just an insane number to think about. And I think a lot of Preds fans are very worried about, as players do start getting healthy, what does that mean for the younger players who have been such a critical part of, because it's a tough position for head coach John Hines to be in, because you can only start so many players, obviously. So it's like, what do you do? It's like it's a really tough dilemma to be in. It's a good problem to have because that means you are where you are right now. But at the same time, man, it's going to be tough. I'm glad you brought up the blue line because it kind of helps me go into kind of my next question, which, so we were all thinking for sure we can't push the rebuild off any longer. It needs to happen. And I'm not saying it still doesn't need to happen to some degree, but you know, obviously it's changed a little bit now. Winning will do that for you. And so I guess my question is, what does the future hold past this season for regarding the youth, regarding just like, okay, are the Preds maybe going to avoid a massive rebuild and maybe they can remain playoff competitive even going into next season after what we've seen? Kind of pull out your crystal ball for us here a little bit if you want. kind of tell us what you see happening going into next season and maybe even past next season.
Yeah, I mean, and look, the Predators are going to have some tough decisions to make next year. I believe Ekholm will be in a contract year next year. Forsberg's going to be in a contract year next year.
The Forsberg one is looming large right now.
Yeah, those are two big pieces. And I think, I know Ekholm was a big focal point on a lot of trade boards a month and a half ago before the Predators got into the playoff race. But I think, you know, he's a good, steady constant, and it'll be interesting kind of, like, I think a lot of Ekholm's future with the franchise will depend on how their season starts next year. If it starts anything like they did this year, then maybe they will push the reset button and look to trade him for some assets. And I think not that he's necessarily replaceable or expendable, but I think the fact that they have had so many young blue liners step up and play really well this year, I think that you can justify trading a guy like Ekholm, even though he's at the very worst, he's a number three defenseman on your second, he's on the second pair. And I think you guys mentioned either last week or the week before, like he's basically been the first pair, even with Josi back in the lineup. Like he's been getting a lot of those big minutes against other teams, big lines. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with him next year. My gut tells me that they're going to want to keep Forsberg, even if the season doesn't necessarily go well next year. That doesn't mean that they won't listen to trade talks or maybe look at him becoming a rental for someone and then looking to try and re-sign him in the off season next year. But I think in terms of next year, like based on early in the season, the goaltending worried me. Because Saros did not have a good start to the year. But again, since he's come back from injury, he's looked like a completely different player. So
they would probably move forward with him for sure.
Yeah. I think moving forward with him as the starter, I think that's a safe bet. I think that's, he'll be okay. The big question mark that I have about next year. And again, maybe it'll depend on how the season starts. How the first couple months go, again, kind of assuming that it might be a full 82 game season next year. Like, I know that's, that's a whole completely different discussion at this point. And I know there's been a lot of talk on Twitter about this too, but like, what do the Preds do at center? They have two centers who are eating up $8 million cap hits. Mm-hmm. I don't see them keeping both of them. I don't see both of them being on the roster at the end of next season.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, not to say that they'll get rid of both of them.
You're talking about Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson.
Yeah, sorry,
right?
Yeah. Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson. I think one of them will be on the roster when the season ends next year. But I think, you know, I think if they are going to move into any kind of reset or, you know, soft rebuild or even a full rebuild, getting rid of one of those salaries is going to be very important to achieving that. Which center will it be? I don't know. Which center? I know who I would pick. I would pick to keep Duchene. Mm-hmm. And you know, I've tweeted about this a lot over the last couple of weeks. Like, look at their not even just looking at their point production, but looking at things like shot production, or the, you know, the amount of chances that they help create. Like, Duchene is more dynamic and has been more dynamic this year.
It's been a shame to see Duchene miss so much time this season, because he gets a lot of criticism, and some of it is just not fair criticism whatsoever. And I mean, you take that with the territory, a player like, you know, Matt Duchene, who came over to the Preds originally as a major acquisition. And so he was up against that pressure from the start, and it's just a shame that he's missed all this time, and it happened coincidentally with right when the Preds started on this hot streak. And so, you know, you've got these prevailing thoughts of, oh, well, it must have been Matt Duchene that was the problem, because the Preds, and that's just stuff I got to throw out on the wayside when that stuff comes out.
Yeah.
But so I'm hoping that Duchene can get an opportunity, as you're saying, to really, you know, avoid the injury bug and show his worth so that he can be a part of this team for the long-term future.
Yeah. And, you know, like, the other part of it too is, it's not like they're going on this big run because Ryan Johansson is playing really well. He's not, in my opinion, at least from, you know, from a production or a creating offense perspective. Mm-hmm. But that's not to say that he doesn't come out and score 25 points in the first 20 games next year. Like, that could,
he's got that ability. He's that type of player.
He could definitely do that.
As you're saying, his assist numbers are what stick out to me. Like, he was an assist machine for the Preds just a couple seasons ago, had over 50 assists, I believe. And I know you can go even deeper into those analytics and see some other stuff, but just on the surface alone, you can see that Johansson has definitely taken a big dip since, you know, before last season, I should say. And so, you know, he's had his moments though throughout this recent stretch. He's also had his moments. Of course, that slow motion shootout goal he scored. Everyone loves that stuff. But as far as in the game, not in a shootout, you know, we're just like Duchene, we're looking for Johansson to really step up in this moment.
Yeah, and that shootout goal that you mentioned, I mean, that's just a glimpse into what Johansson has the ability to do.
Oh, it's my
just,
gosh.
You know, can he do this? Can he do that on a more consistent basis during head? And, you know, maybe he turns it on here over the next 15 games or however many exactly are left, but, you know, which would be great. You know, if the Predators are already on this type of tear and scoring a bunch of goals, imagine if Johansson gets hot.
Oh, wow.
How many more they can score, right?
Absolutely. And I think people were just, maybe they weren't so excited about going into the next couple seasons before all this youth got their chance to play due to all these injuries. But now suddenly, regardless of what happens the remainder of this current season, I mean, there's reasons to be really excited about the near future for the Nashville Predators. Yeah. I mean, we're still waiting to see Philip Tomasino get up here.
I know.
David Ferentz made his NHL debut. A lot of people are really high on David Ferentz. Connor Ingram is finally getting back into the AHL, is projected as the future backup to Saros. That's what everyone's always thought.
Yep.
And of course, you got Yaroslav Askarov, who was our draft pick. There's just so much coming through the pipeline right now that have Preds fans very, very excited, regardless of what happens the remainder of this current season.
Yeah. And the thing that I think is really encouraging from a Predators perspective is the fact that we've just spent the last 5 minutes talking about the great young talent that the Preds have, and we haven't mentioned Ely Tolvanen's name in this conversation.
Yeah, which is kind of blasphemy on our part, but
yeah,
there's so much to comb through.
Yeah, it speaks to the depth that maybe we didn't know the Preds had before. Like, I know before the season, one of the criticisms towards the Predators was, well, like, who is their depth? Like, they have all these guys on the roster with NHL experience, but like, look through their prospect system and like, who are these guys? And Carrier, like, we know who Carrier is now. We know who Davies is now. We're going to find out who Ference is now. And Tolvanen has really stepped up and he really put the power play on his back, basically, over the last few games before he got hurt.
Yeah.
But
pretty amazing.
He's a guy too. Like, you can, again, assuming that you can hang on to Forsberg, but like with Forsberg and Tolvanen, on your first line, like, you can build around that, especially, knowing that you have a franchise cornerstone in Roman Josi and other depth on the blue line. Like, those are pieces that you can build around and build with.
Yeah. All right. So we're being joined by Ray Perkin, who writes for the Hockey Writers and covers the Preds. He's joining us for a segment here on episode 35 of the Catfish and Ice podcast. Let's dive into this. Let's go back to current times here, and let's look into, that we're right in this playoff stretch here. Preds are holding on to the fourth spot. I even saw, I'm even seeing, like, crazy enough, the Preds being like put into some people's like top five power rankings. I think that's going a little too overboard there, but they are definitely on people's radars once again, which is really cool to see. And let's see how they can navigate through injury after injury. They've done it, but you have to wonder how long they can sustain this. I mean, how many injuries can you deal with? And I know a lot of teams are dealing with similar issues. I'm not saying the Preds are alone in that. But, Ray, what do you think – how far do you think they can really ride this wave realistically and objectively? I know we want to see them keep riding it, obviously. But, I mean, what's the measuring stick? Like, what do we really think – okay, this is their ceiling. This is probably what's going to happen, and we should be happy and pleased with it and going to next season with a new clean slate.
Well, I mean, you look at the remaining schedule, and they have games left against Tampa. They have games left against Florida. They have games left against Carolina. Those, to me, like, those are three of the top teams in the league right now, let alone the division.
Yeah.
The biggest three games from a Predators perspective, they have three games in a row coming up against Chicago in a 5-day span. And to me, Chicago, I know Dallas is getting healthy. And, they're going to get guys like Tyler Seguin and Ben Bishop back potentially. But to me, I look at Chicago as being maybe the team that has the best chance at catching Nashville for the fourth playoff spot. So those three games are going to be crucial.
Yes. Three in a row against the same team. That almost never happens.
Yeah. And I think the first one is in Nashville, and then the second two are both in Chicago. So being able to come away with, at least two regulation wins, I think would pretty much, I mean, it doesn't do anything mathematically, but I think that pretty much seals the deal that Nashville will finish ahead of Chicago in the standings.
Yes.
From a momentum standpoint,
like, you can almost check off one of those teams and say, okay, we don't really have to worry about this team anymore.
Yeah. Columbus is kind of a wild card too, but I know, like, they're starting to trade a bunch of their assets. Yes. So it seems like they're kind of folding at this point, instead of staying in the hand, to use a poker reference. assuming that the Predators can hang on to this fourth spot, and make the playoffs, I think, again, based on how the season started, I think that's a huge achievement and something you can build on. Keeping the core intact, keeping some of these young guys around goes a long way to sustaining that kind of success through the next year, two years, so on and so forth. But you look at those three other teams ahead of them in the standings, and like Tampa Bay, I think they're a top three team in the entire league. And whether or not they're there in the standings, I think they're primed for a repeat, and they have the ability to do that.
Have they?
I think you can say that, no one would bat an eye. They'd be like, yep, Tampa's good.
So have you seen, Have they announced whether the first round is going to be 5 or 7-game series? Is that been made official yet?
I haven't heard anything. I've kind of been under the assumption that that it would be a 7-game okay. series. Now, some of that might depend on when the regular season actually ends. I know there's still questions.
I wanted to make sure I didn't overlook something. Maybe I missed something. Yeah. If they did announce it, it was going to be like the first round would be a 5-game series. But, you know, a 7-game series, no matter who they end up playing, whether, you know, of course, if they make it in, out of those three, I guess I would – I mean, it's pick your poison. I definitely don't want any part of Carolina in the first round. That's the team – that's the least team I would want to face in the first round. Maybe out of all three, I feel like the Preds would have the best chance at maybe upsetting the Florida Panthers, only because they have beaten them twice and they have kind of hung with them matchup-wise. But I'm right there with you. Just making the playoffs after everything they've been through, I think fans would have to come away with that feeling pretty good about that. I know fans are sick of losing in the playoffs. I know that this franchise is starving for their first Stanley Cup. But when you put everything together of what this season, how it went and where we're at now, I think you have to put it into perspective here and think that this season is unlike the other seasons where the Preds lost in the first round, where the expectations were much higher and you already expected to make the playoffs. That was a given. And then you just lay a dud, for instance, against the Dallas Stars in 2019.
Yeah. And you talked about perspective and the same season being different. I mean, look at A, the way the season started, which was awful, and B, the amount of injuries that they've gone through and are going through. And I think making the playoffs is, you know, that's a great sign. I think fans can be happy about that, you know, as kind of a moral victory. But again, like once you make the playoffs, anything can happen.
Anything can happen. That's the beauty of NHL playoffs.
And I mentioned earlier, like I'm a Sens fan. I've grown up watching the Sens. I've watched them and followed them closely for a long, long time. I'm kind of getting some 2017 Ottawa Senators vibes from this Predators team, where they're, you know, they're kind of limping and you know, not miraculously, but you know, they find their way into the playoffs. And I remember that year in 2017, like Ottawa was up against Boston in round one, and everyone was like, "Oh, Boston in five, like yeah, that's a given." And Ottawa won that series, and then they played New York, and everyone was like, you know, Lundqvist was still playing really well, and they had a bunch of other things going for them, and everyone was like, "Oh yeah, Rangers in five, like that's an easy pick." And the Senators won that series, and then they're up against Pittsburgh, and everyone's going, "Okay, well, yeah, like Pittsburgh's going to take this one in four, like no shot." And Ottawa pushed them to double overtime in Game 7.
I still remember that game like it was yesterday, because of course the Preds had already gotten into the Stanley Cup, and so we were all watching this like, "Who are we going to play? Who are we going to play?" We didn't want to play the Penguins, I'll be honest.
No.
But either way, we'll never know. That's, you know, that was for both of our teams, the Preds and the Senators, what a magical playoff run in 2017 for both teams. And it does go to show you anything can happen.
Yeah, and you look at kind of some of the similarities, like who was Ottawa's best player that year? Well, in that playoff run, Erik Karlsson was the best hockey player in the world. I don't think that's debatable. Like he was unbelievable. Roman Josi right now, I don't know if I'd say he's the best player in the world, but this is the best we've seen him play in a long time. And that keep in mind, like this guy won the Norris last year. He's reaching that next level once again. Ottawa had really, really good goaltending as they were approaching the playoffs and into the playoffs. Well, Rene and Saros have both been playing out of their mind over the last few games. Ottawa was getting scoring, and not only scoring from their big guns, but scoring from depth guys too. You look at Nashville right now, like, yeah, Arvidsson had a hat trick last night, but they're also getting goals from, you know, Sissons and, you know, Tolvanen wasn't a first line player at the start of the year. Yarncroak is not a first line player. Like Erik Haula and Michael Granlund are playing really well, and they've been everywhere in the lineup. First line, flying, like they're scoring whoever they're playing with. So, to me, the one big question mark for Nashville moving forward is their penalty kill, because I think it's still the worst in the league.
It's probably still, I mean, that's pretty much where we reside constantly is in that last. I think we've bounced between 31st and 30th, but
I think a part of that is because like they started the season so poorly, like it was like every every second power play or every second penalty kill, the puck was
so bad. In the net. It was hard to watch. So it was very
I think it's improved a little bit since then, but that still is definitely the weakness. And you know, if you're going to take down a team like Tampa Bay or Carolina or Florida, all of whom have really good power plays, you're going to have to either stay completely out of the penalty box,
which is hard,
which is unrealistic.
Plus the style they play. I don't think it's,
yeah,
they take penalties. It's just what this team does.
Yeah, no. You're right. So I think, that might be the biggest kind of downfall. Absolutely. Going into, whether it's a 5-game or a 7-game series against one of one of the big three teams in the division.
Yeah. All right. So let's get you out of here with this. This has been a great discussion so far with Ray Perkin of the Hockey Writers, who covers the Nashville Predators for them. Let's talk about the expansion draft, which is getting here soon, and it's going to be very entertaining to watch. We all know what happened with the Vegas Golden Knights and how they stacked their roster with a lot of really good players. When it comes to the Seattle Kraken, I'm seeing them really, they have a good chance to get a really good goaltender out of this, just like the Golden Knights did. But in respects to the Preds and who the Preds could lose, I really feel like, I'll see if you agree with me, Ray, I really think the writing's on the wall if the Preds are going to lose a really good forward out of this. I just don't see the numbers working out, but maybe you see it differently. So kind of how do you see it, Ray? How do you see the expansion draft looking for the Preds?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, you look at the blue line and there's a lot of depth on the blue line, but Josi has the no movement clause. I definitely see them protecting Ellis and Ekholm. And a guy like Borowiecki might be tempting, but he's only got 1 year left on his contract. And, with his injury situation he's a guy who I think will still be in Nashville through the expansion draft. So I agree with you in the sense that they're going to lose a forward. Now, who is that forward going to be? I don't know. Part of it depends on who they protect. Presumably, they're going to protect Forsberg and Arvidsson. I can see Cali Yarncroak being a guy who they're going to protect. Potentially, again, like I don't know for sure, but based on how he's played this year at both ends of the ice, he's a guy that I see them wanting to keep around at least through his contract next year, or potentially be a trade asset next year, depending on how next season starts. Maybe it's a guy like Colton Sissons. He's a guy who can play anywhere in the lineup. He's played on the first line at times this year. He's played on the fourth line at times this year. Luke Cunnan, who is a guy who next summer is going to be a restricted free agent. So not only would Seattle get to, have him next year, but they'd still have his rights after next season, even though his contract expires. And again, he's another guy, like he can play anywhere in the lineup, first line, second line, third line, power play. Sissons is a penalty kill guy too. So
Luke Cunnan has really, really raised his personal stock since coming back. Yeah. From his own injury. He was yet another Preds player who was injured. And then you bring up Colton Sissons. I feel like I wasn't thinking this way going into the season, but Colton Sissons looks like a player that we could end up losing for sure. And here's the thing about Sissons. He's the only player on the Preds that has played in every game this season, which is pretty amazing.
And the appealing thing about him from Seattle's perspective is he doesn't become a free agent until 2026, and he's a cap hit of just around 2.9 million. If that's a guy who can play on the first line and score 25 or 30 goals, which I think, not saying he's going to do that, but I think the potential is there that he could be that type of player, like almost like William Karlsson was in Vegas their first year, or Jonathan Marchessault, like a guy who kind of floats under the radar and then goes to the expansion team and explodes. Yeah. I think, he could be that type of guy. And again, like he's cheap and affordable at 2.8, 2.9. The one thing to keep in mind and the one thing that's going to be kind of interesting to see is the position that we talked about before with those two $8 million centers. Because Seattle's going to have to get to the salary cap floor. They're not going to be able to do that, picking a bunch of guys who are 2.8, 2.9 million dollar hits through the expansion draft. They're not going to be able to get to the salary cap floor necessarily through free agency. So I like, does, and again, like I have, there's nothing, there's no evidence.
Yeah, we're just speculating. Like,
this is anything totally that's going to happen. This is entirely my own personal speculation.
Yeah.
And like, I haven't seen this written anywhere or reported anywhere. It's just, again, my own speculation. But I wonder if Nashville works out one of those like side deals with Seattle and says like, hey, we'll leave you Duchesne or Johansson available. We'll take $1.5 million of their salary. So you're still getting like a decent sized salary of $6.5 million. You get a top line center who has term on his contract.
I think
Duchesne is 2026 as well, and Johansson's 2025. And in exchange, you know, maybe they get a conditional draft pick down the road, like one of those side deals, like, because you know that's going to happen. Like, that's what happened with
them. And then in return, the Preds get out of, and in return, the Preds get out of one of these long contracts that they might want to get out of. So, or yeah. So if that's a, that's not a far-fetched thought at all.
Yeah. I don't know the likelihood of that. Like I would think that if the Predators are going to jettison one of those two centers, that they're going to do that through like a proper trade, like player for players and assets. But I mean, it's an interesting thought. Like, what if that's how they, like, what if there are no, no bites for Duchesne in the off season, or what if no one is interested in a Johansson trade? Like, maybe that's just a way to, like you said, like just offload one of those big contracts that they're not going to want to keep around for a long time.
Oh man. So many storylines with the NHL this season, and it's been fun to watch. And Ray, I really appreciate you joining us on episode 35 of the Catfish and Ice podcast. We got to do this again sometime. I hope everything's going well up in north of the border for you. Go follow Ray Perkin at Ray Perkin on Twitter. He writes for the Hockey Writers. Go read all of his awesome content for them. He interacts with us a lot on Twitter, and we always have some good discussion on there. So go check that out. And that's going to do it for episode 35 of Catfish and Ice podcast presented by DraftKings. We will see you for the next episode later this week. And until then, go Preds. And everyone stay safe and take care of one another, and we'll see you next week.
Hey, hockey fans, I'm Breezy.
And I'm Ray Ray. We host the House of Hockey podcast on the Hockey Podcast Network.
We're lifelong hockey fans who talk about the game and the lifestyle. Our guests include professional hockey players.
My rookie party had to wear Speedo, and then we had a checklist of stuff we had to do.
Here we go, Gaber. What do you got to say? And it's kind of like, you know better than that now, boys.
I got dressed for the Bruins. Get a phone call. He's like, dude, we need you over here by the elevator. You got to get downstairs. You got to get dressed right now.
Started playing the like, dun, 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 dun. And I turned it around and it had the Olympic rings and said, we did it.
NHL team hockey reporters.
I actually took the Stanley Cup to this ice bar where they've got now girls around them and I've got a fur coat on.
I wonder who he should have checked over here. And then I looked down at my feet.
Hockey fans.
The entire bar was lined with guys in Kings jerseys. We quickly realized, oh my gosh, this is the dad's trip.
And we bring unique hockey stories to light.
Coming back to England, 24 rinks in the entire country. That's where the problem starts with the sport of ice hockey here.
Canadian Blind Hockey Association, those few kids we interviewed, their whole week is built around Sunday at the rink. They're just hockey players.
We don't agree on everything.
Pineapple goes on pizza.
No, it does not.
I think it does.
But we do agree that there are many people and places that build the House of Hockey.
New episodes every Tuesday. Come on in to the House of Hockey podcast on the Hockey Podcast Network.